ichchannabhayamatmana yena pasristat purusha loka udvijite brisham na buddhastad brisham gachet ichchannabhayamatmana. Vaishnavis. Yena, by which upasristat, being overwhelmed. Purushat, by the person. Loka, everyone. Udvijate, becomes terrified. Brisham, greatly. Na, never. Buddha, a learned person. Tat, of anger. Vasham, under the control. Gachet, should go. Ichchan, desiring. Abhayam, fearlessness, liberation. Atmana, of the self. Translation, a person who desires liberation from this material world should not fall under the control of anger. Because when bewildered by anger, one becomes a source of dread for all others. Purport. A devotee or saintly person should not be dreadful to others, nor should anyone be a source of dread to him. If one treats others with non-enmity, then no one will become his enemy. There is the example, however, of Jesus Christ, who had enemies and they crucified him. The demonic are always present, and they find fault even in saintly persons. But a saintly person never becomes angry, even if there is very great provocation. Translation, repeat. A person who desires liberation from this material world should not fall under the control of anger. Because when bewildered by anger, one becomes a source of dread for all others. Om Agena Timurandasya Ganandjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pabunitananda Siddhvaita Galara Sivasavi Goa Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. The role of anger in material existence plays a very deadly function. In this verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that when you fall under the control of anger, you become bewildered. This point is made in so many places in Bhagavad Gita, that from lust, naturally there must be anger. And then, after anger, there is bewilderment, there is illusion, and then you're firmly entrapped in the grip of material illusion. Why must anger always be there when there is lust? Today's so-called civilization makes a big point about how lust is just a free and easy activity. The lust wells up in you, you gratify it, and then you live happily ever after, in peace, in fulfillment, in satisfaction and contentment. The whole thrust of today's animalistic society is to get you to understand that lust is such an easy thing. There's no hang-ups, there's no problems. Spend your whole life lusting away, and this way, your highest goal in life will be fulfilled. But when we study the Shastra, we get a completely different understanding. And of course, when we look at the results of today's super lusty society, we also can understand the results are opposite of what is expected. Anger must always come when there is material desire, because material desire cannot be satisfactorily fulfilled. If you can understand this point, then you'll be peaceful. Anytime you have a material hankering, anytime you have a material longing or desire, you must become angry, because the material desire will not be satisfied. That means that you have an extraordinary amount of anger in material society. Now, most people will not think of themselves as angry persons, but if they look inside themselves, they'll see that because there are material desires, there is some anger locked up inside. It may be deep down inside, but it's there. It has to be there because lust is there. In the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Trividham Narakasyedam Dwaram Nashana Atmana. There are three gates to hell: lust, anger, and greed. Every sane person should give these up because they'll destroy you. Lust is not innocent. Anger is not innocent. Greed is not innocent. But the propaganda of today's society is that lust is free and easy, it's carefree. And anger, if you happen to feel angry, just express it. Get it off your chest. Leave it at that. And greed, well, the more you have, the better. This naive understanding of these deadly enemies is causing havoc in people's personal life. Overtly, they may not be known as angry, but inside, it's locked up. And that locked up anger inside causes bewilderment. They cannot properly see what is the goal of life. You cannot have world peace as long as there is lust, because when there is lust, there must be anger, and the anger manifests in terms of violence and war. We understand these things through the eyes of Shastra very clearly. The message of today's corrupt society is that it is possible to have world peace through sense gratification. Now, as soon as there is sense gratification, there must be anger, because sense gratification cannot satisfy you. We have to distinguish between the illusory presentation of Maya. This will make you feel good. This will take away your tensions. This will thrill you to the core of your heart. It is never like that. And therefore, you become angry. Whether you overtly express it or you internalize it, the anger is there. And as Prabhupada explains in one purport in Bhagavad Gita, the anger pollutes the whole body. So you have persons walking around who are the embodiment of lust and anger pollution. That must be there, even though they may seem very nice and courteous. That pollution from lust and anger must be there because there are material desires. As soon as you have a material desire, you should know, I am going to have dissatisfaction and anger, because those desires cannot be fulfilled. Now, Krishna says a very interesting thing. Lord Chaitanya reveals the mindset of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Lord Chaitanya is speaking in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He's speaking to Sanatana Goswami, and he says, if my devotee has material desires, I know exactly how to handle it. In other words, have no fear, have full confidence. If a devotee is serving Krishna with material desires, the Lord knows exactly what to do. We should feel comfortable and secure knowing that Krishna can handle our desires. When you know that your desires are taken into account and they're being managed, Lord Krishna is expert at desire management. And he says, if my devotee has desires, I know how to deal with it. I will fulfill those material desires in such a way that the devotee will not ask for that thing again. In fact, I'll arrange things so that the devotee will become overwhelmed by the fragrance of the lotus feet, and he'll forget all about his material desires and instead begin to hanker for devotional service. This is Krishna explaining how he does things. It is possible to serve Krishna with material desires, and if you maintain your steadiness in devotional service, the Lord will reciprocate with you by making you forget those desires. And he'll also fulfill those desires in a very antiseptic way, in a way that the sincere devotee will not ask for that thing again. Lord Chaitanya, speaking about Krishna's mindset, says, I'm not unintelligent. My dear devotee is approaching me with material desires. Why should I give the devotee poison? Instead, I'll induce him to serve me, and he'll forget all about his material desires, becoming overwhelmed by the flavors of devotional service. We should have complete confidence that Krishna can handle us. Sometimes we feel insecure that, does anyone understand me? Does anyone understand my heart? Does anyone understand my desires? But you're dealing with Krishna, who's the most expert in desire management. The desires of a devotee, even if they're material, because the devotee is serving Krishna, those desires are cleansed. They don't lead to the deadly results that material desires in a non-devotee lead to. The problem, however, is that if the devotee slackens in devotional service, then you disqualify yourself from Krishna's unfathomable desire management expertise. We have to keep up our side of the contract, so to speak. We want to be deeply absorbed in devotional service so that Krishna will manage our desires for us. And we may have some childish desires that are material, but Krishna says, don't worry, I'll take care of that. I may fulfill those desires, but I'll definitely do it in a way that you won't ever repeat those same desires. And I'll make you forget those desires. Instead, I'll give you the flavor of my lotus feet. This is real security. Now, outside of devotional service, what is the future for your desires? You must become angry. And when you become angry, there must be someone to blame. That is the story of material existence. Who do I blame for my state of unfulfillment? Who do I accuse for my current state of dissatisfaction? So this anger manifests in family strife, political strife, war, atrocities, terrorism, all because of material desires. But who is there who is singling out the enemy of lust, material desire? No. The illusion spread throughout today's corrupt society is that there can be peace through sense gratification. That is impossible. Now, if we look at the root of the whole situation, the root of these internal dynamics of the conditioned soul, we must go to the spiritual world. The first sloka in Bhagavatam says, Janmadi Yasyataha, the absolute truth is that from which everything emanates. This means that love of God is the origin of all our emotions. But when those emotions are in contact with the material world, then the original flavors of love of God become perverted. The example Srila Prabhupada gives is milk coming in contact with something that causes the milk to sour. The original milk transforms into something else. So our Vaishnav scientific philosophy is very amazing. At the root of all the emotions you see in the material world is pure love of God. The emotions of bhakti rasa are the root of all emotional psychology in the material world. But because of conditioned life, because of the distortions produced by the illusory energy, the original love of Krishna becomes perverted into lust and then into anger. Bhakti yoga means to reverse the process, to take that anger and lust, purify it, and then develop, revive our pure love for Krishna. Where else are you going to find such an extraordinary explanation? The Bhagavatam covers everything. Sometimes people have a hard time believing it. How can Krishna consciousness really explain everything and cover everything? But if you regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll gain that confidence. Indeed, Janmadi Asyataha, the absolute truth is that from which everything emanates. Therefore, real religion should be able to explain emotions and their expression in relation to the Supreme Lord. And that is exactly what Bhagavatam does, Rupa Goswami does in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Then, of course, the confidential bhakti literatures like Ujjwala Nilomani, they're dealing with pure emotions and pure spiritual bodies. So, we're not afraid to deal with lust and anger. In fact, as we pointed out yesterday, Narottam Das Thakur says the bhakti program means to use all these emotions, lust, anger, and greed, in Krishna's service. That's their rightful place. In today's purport, we read that a saintly person never becomes angry, even if there is very great provocation. But then yesterday you heard all about devotees using anger in Krishna's service. A devotee is always nonviolent. He's qualified with all good characteristics. But in the common world, when there is mischief made by others, he, meaning the devotee, should not forget to become angry, at least for the time being, in order to drive away the miscreants. So is this contradictory? Not at all. A saintly person never becomes angry for his own purposes or for his own gratification. But for Krishna's service, one can become angry. For Krishna's service, one can become lusty. For Krishna's service, one can become greedy. All for Krishna's pleasure. Once you start to use all your emotions for Krishna's pleasure, then you can better understand the spiritual world, where all the emotional expression is 100% for Krishna's pleasure. All the bodies are 100% spiritual. So this is how wonderful the bhakti science is. You can understand the material world. You can understand the spiritual world. And you gain confidence that because Krishna is the master at handling emotions and desires, you're in the right place. And then you'll finally become peaceful in your devotional service when you know Krishna can handle me. Everyone wants to feel appreciated. Everyone wants to feel that their needs are taken into account. But that is Krishna's specialty. He knows how to handle our desires. And this way a devotee doesn't become angry, because the desires are perfectly managed by Krishna. Anger comes from unfulfilled material desires. But Krishna says, even if my devotee has some material desires, I may choose to fulfill it so he never asks for that thing again, or simultaneously, I'll cause him to forget those desires because he'll be tasting my lotus feet and he'll just want that. This is the peace of bhakti yoga. Srila Prabhupada always pointed out that the non-devotees are amazed. How have the Krishna conscious people forgotten material desires? What's going on? Sometimes it's a great shock when people observe devotees. Something is missing in you. Something's not right. They don't feel the lust. They don't feel the capacity for anger. And they think something is wrong. Of course, those who are fortunate, they appreciate the qualities of devotees. This anger is such a powerful thing. And you can remember in your own life when you became very angry. It's like an uncontrollable storm set loose in your mind and body. Polluting, the Bhagavatam says. Yet there is pure expression of anger. You can see that in Krishna Leela. We can think about near the end of Krishna's manifest appearance in this world. He had just killed Shalva, Dantavakra, and Dantavakra's friend or brother, Vidurath. After Krishna had done all that, it meant the end of his killing mission in this world. Those were the last demons that he killed. There was still, Rikasura to come, but that was Lord Shiva's problem, and Krishna tricked Rikasura into killing himself. But the last demons that Krishna himself killed, Shalva, Dantavakra, and Vidurath, this is a very momentous occasion, because at that point, Krishna retired from annihilating the demons personally. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Prachalaya sadhunam vinashaya chudaskatam, to deliver the sadhus and to annihilate the miscreants. So in this point in Krishna Leela, it's very momentous because the Lord wound up his annihilation of the miscreants. But Balaram still had a few more miscreants to deal with. The battle of Kurukshetra was starting, and Balaram was not disturbed, but he didn't want to in any way be involved because he had friends on both sides. So he made an excuse, a diplomatic excuse. Balaram decided, I'll go on pilgrimage. And this way he ducked the whole battle. He went on a tour of the holy places. And he came to Naimisharanya, the place where sadhus gather and perform yajnas, sacrifices. They may stay there for thousands of years. You remember in the beginning of the Bhagavatam how Sita Goswami and the sages of Naimisharanya are gathered to try and understand what is the highest form of religion and how can people in Kali Yuga be benefited. So Balaram came to Naimisharanya, and there was a great convocation, a great assembly of sadhus, mystics, ascetics. So as soon as this great assembly saw Balaram, everyone stood up because they recognized, here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They stood up, they bowed down, they offered pranams, joining their palms together. These are the three signs of respect. Even those who were elderly sages, older than Balaram, they stood up and they offered blessings. So everyone did something to acknowledge, here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead entering into our assembly at Naimisharanya. Everyone except Romaharshana Sutta. He was seated on the Brahmasan, the seat of the chief priest, the chief brahmana. And he didn't get up. Balaram noticed this. And Balaram became angry. Now you might think, how can the Supreme Personality of Godhead become angry? Let us think about Balaram's approach to the situation. Lord Balaram began to meditate on his mission statement. It always helps to have a mission statement. Said, what am I doing in this world? I'm in this world to annihilate the miscreants. I thought that I could retire from this. Lord Krishna, my brother, he's finished his annihilation of the miscreants. But it looks like there's a few more jobs left here. Now, you're shocked. Why would Balaram consider Romaharshana Sutta to be a miscreant? Why was he so angry? Let's look at the external qualifications of Romaharshana Sutta. He was a shishya, a disciple of Vyasadeva. Under Vyasadeva's tutelage, Romaharshana Sutta had studied the Vedic literatures, the Puranas. He was knowledgeable in the Shastra. But Balaram's considering, externally, he has all this knowledge, but he has not become gentle. He has not become humble. Therefore, all his acquisition of knowledge, it's just like an actor who's playing an actor's role. There's no real substance there. He's just going through the motions. He doesn't have any inner spiritual vitality. This is how Balaram analyzed the situation. Then Balaram began to consider the birth of Romaharshana Sutta. He's thinking Romaharshana Sutta has taken the position of leading this assembly of brahmanas, but by his misbehavior, I'm forced to consider his material circumstances. He's actually not a high-class brahmana. His father is a kshatriya, and his mother is a brahmana. And this is improper. His birth circumstances aren't very reputable. Yet he is acting in such an exalted way. Now you might ask, why is Balaram considering the material circumstances of Romaharshana Sutta? Isn't this a transcendental affair? Why would he harp upon Romaharshana Sutta's birth situation? He did that because Romaharshana Sutta was not acting as a brahmana. Romaharshana Sutta had the chance to be an exalted brahmana, but he did not develop the proper qualities. So therefore, Balaram began to consider the whole situation. If indeed Romaharshana Sutta had risen to the occasion and become a qualified brahmana, then Balaram wouldn't have done that. Because everyone has a chance to be a brahmana by guna and karma, by quality and activity. But because Romaharshana Sutta was just adopting the externals of being a brahmana, Balaram began to get on his case materially. Well, what's the purpose of your show anyway? Let's think about your parents. Let's think about your mother, your father. Something's deficient here. In this way, Balaram took apart the whole situation and was getting very angry. So, after reflecting on his purpose in this world, Balaram came to the conclusion that this is a great show of religious hypocrisy. That means this is demoniac. This person is pretending to be a great devotee, pretending to be a master of Dharma, when actually he has no humility, He's not gentle. He's not self-controlled. This kind of misbehavior causes great havoc in the world. Therefore, there's only one thing for me to do. So Balaram picked up a piece of kusha grass, touched it to Ramaharshnasutta, killed Ramaharshnasutta. Maybe some of you who know this Leela wonder, why such a severe reaction? Why was Balaram angry like this? Well, you have to consider Balaram's presentation of what irreligion is. Religious hypocrisy Balaram could not tolerate. So, as soon as Ramaharshnasutta was killed by the kusha grass wielded by the angry Balaram, the sages immediately protested, Oh, what's going on? It looks like you, Balaram, have committed a dharma, irreligion. You have killed a brahmana. Didn't you know that we voted for Ramaharshnasutta to be the chief speaker here, and we had equipped him with longevity and freedom from sensory disturbance, freedom from physical pain as long as the yajna is going on. But you've just killed him. Just see what happened. The sages had conferred longevity and freedom from pain upon Ramaharshnasutta, but Balaram finished him off in a split second. So they were, there was a bit of an uproar. Balaram, you've committed a dharma. Then they began to reflect on the situation. The sages began to reflect, and they said, you are Yogeshwara. You're the master of mystic power. Therefore, it's not that you are bound by any kind of Vedic injunctions. You're free to do whatever you want. At the same time, you're Lokapavana. You're the purifier of the whole world by your establishing religious principles and following religious principles. Somehow this situation has to be resolved. We gave these benedictions to Ramaharshnasutta. He's a brahmana. And you killed him. Please do something about this. So Balaram considered what to do. Balaram immediately said, all right, if you want, I'll bring him back to life. He'll have more longevity and more prowess than before. The sages said, no, don't do that. And then they presented like a riddle to Balaram, a puzzle, suitable for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We want that our benedictions upon Ramaharshnasutta be honored. And we also want that your killing him, that also is honored. So we want him dead, and we want also our benedictions that he's long lived, that also happen. So Balaram considered what to do. And as a Supreme Personality of Godhead, he immediately solved this complex situation. He said, this is what will happen. The Vedas say that the father lives again through the son. When you have a son, that is like the life of the father. So what we'll do, we'll take Ugrasrava Sutta, the son of Ramaharshnasutta, and we'll put him on the Vyasa-san. And you can confer upon the son of Ramaharshnasutta all the benedictions you gave Ramaharshnasutta. In this way, Ramaharshnasutta lives through the sun. So the sages were very happy with that. But then Balaram said, it's true that I have to consider what the people will think, and that is compassion. Balaram said this himself. I have to be compassionate upon the people in general and set a proper example. That means I should atone. The brahmanas had requested Balaram. You were angry. You killed this brahmana. Atonement is necessary. And Balaram agreed. Yes, out of compassion I should do this. So Balaram asked them, what would you like? You tell me. Anything you say, I'll do. The Brahmanas thought about it and said, there is a demon, Bhovala, who periodically comes to Naimisharanya and showers blood, pus, stool, and meat upon our yajna. If you can kill him, that will solve the problem of atonement. And then after you kill him, please, for 12 months, go on a tour of the holy places. In this way, you'll set an example for the common persons for how to seek purification for the actions we do in this world. So Balaram readily agreed. He did that. He killed Bhovala. He went on tour of the holy places. And then, right at the end of Balaram's tour of the holy places, he came through the battle of Kurukshetra at its closing moments. Millions of soldiers had already been killed. The final moments were that Duryodhan and Bhima were locked into mortal combat with clubs, each intent on finishing the other off. So Balaram, he saw, look at the situation. Bhima excels in physical strength. And Duryodhan excels in the technique of fighting with the club because I taught him. So neither can conquer. Meanwhile, Lord Krishna and the Pandavas, they're watching. Balaram has suddenly showed up on the scene. They're silently observing. And they're not saying anything because Lord Krishna knows Balaram's a little partial to Duryodhan and company. What's he going to do? Is he going to meddle in this? This is Balaram adding some variety to the situation. So Krishna and the Pandavas are wondering what's going to happen here. But Balaram just told Duryodhan and Bhima, you can't defeat each other. Why don't you just stop? What's the point of all this? But Bhima and Duryodhan were so possessed by anger, they couldn't listen to Balaram. Each one was thinking, I was injured. I was insulted by this person. This person has done this to me. He's done this to my family. This is anger. They couldn't forget. Each one was thinking, I have been the brunt of so much abuse, insult. I've been disrespected. So they were intent on just killing each other. So what was Balaram's conclusion after seeing this extraordinary display of anger? He said, I guess it's fate. It's going to be like that. So he just left. The Acharyas point out that when Balaram said, I guess it's just fate, he was actually meaning, I guess it's just Krishna's arrangement. That's what Krishna wants. Whatever he took off, he just left the scene. So then Balaram went to Naimisharanya. He returned to Naimisharanya, and the sages engaged him in performing yajnas once again to set example for the common people that you have to perform Vedic sacrifice. And after the yajnas were over, Balaram then blessed all the sages by revealing himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead who pervades everything and everything is in him. He showed the sages that vision. They got to see that. So this pastime shows how, yes, there is pure anger. Balaram was definitely angry. And he killed Romaharsana Sutta because Romaharsana Sutta was a religious pretender. His anger has no trace of material contamination. Similarly, when a devotee becomes purified in Krishna consciousness, the anger of a devotee is not a normal thing if it's manifested for Krishna's pleasure. Other than that, though, anger is very, very dangerous. It's very polluting. So therefore, Swayambhuva Manu is speaking to Dhruva like this. Don't fall under the control of material anger. In other words, your anger up to this point has been genuine. It's been bona fide because you're using it in the service of Dharma. But don't go beyond a certain point because then the anger becomes personal ambition and personal fulfillment. And you don't want to do that because material anger will lead to bewilderment. And then one is in the clutches of the illusory energy. So Swayambhuvamanu is taking advantage of Dhruva's predicament in order to give these lessons, which are very important for us. Because normally, we don't think we're angry. Most of us don't think, I don't get angry. I don't have any anger. But locked within us, there can be this frustration, which is anger, due to unfulfilled material desires. And we have to be aware of that and seek to express our desires through devotional service, knowing that Krishna has the expertise to handle our desires and therefore will avoid this horrible problem of frustrated desire, anger, then bewilderment, and then we fall into the material pool. So we'll stop there and ask, are there any questions? Yes, Rabindranath Prabhu.
Hi. You mentioned how a sincere devotee, if he asks for material things and Krishna gives him that, so he won't ask for it anymore. So I want to know where that's mentioned.
Oh, that's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's in Bhagavatam. The verse is in the fifth canto, the prayers by the residents of Jambudweep. And then Lord Chaitanya quotes that verse in his discussions with Sanatana Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Thank you.
Yes.
How about such a method as turning anger on yourself?
In what way? Can you give an example?
Many times I feel like there is a situation where I could express anger, like for the sake of Krishna, but still I feel that I'm not qualified because I still have material desires, That's why I'm thinking that maybe that's the hint that I have to improve myself somehow. I don't know.
Yesterday and last night, at our gathering last night, we were discussing Yudhisthira's presentation of himself after the battle of Kurukshetra. Just look at my heart, the embodiment of sin and ignorance. How could someone like Yudhisthira actually feel that way? But he's taking the blame for the whole Kurukshetra war upon himself, even though actually he's innocent. So a devotee always thinks, problems have happened because of me. Even someone insults a devotee, the devotee thinks, because of my bad consciousness, I in some way influenced a person to treat me like this. So the devotee is always very introspective and thinking, because of my lack of Krishna consciousness, such and such a situation has happened. Not that immediately you want to accuse someone else. It may be in fact true that someone has insulted you or mistreated you, but still, while recognizing that reality, you also think, because of my own lack of Krishna consciousness, this situation has happened. That is what the Shastra recommends. Hare Krishna, glory to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. Krishna, Krishna, Hare.